Good afternoon. This is the Minnesota Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee. For the record, this is Thursday, February 2nd, 2012. And for the record, we do have quorum at this time. We have two orders of business today. Senator Perry will be reintroducing Senate File 1236. You may remember from last year, Senate File 1236 was heard and passed in our committee last session, and it was returned to the committee during the interim. Public testimony has already taken place. A copy of the committee vote is listed in the Senate Journal, and it is included in member packets if you have forgotten how you voted. And other than that, there will be no further testimony today. This is simply a procedural exercise. And Senator Perry, could you give us a brief review of what the bill is about?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon to you and the rest of the committee. Senate File 1236 is what's called the Innocent Successor Bill. It's a bill that relates only to those companies that became successors to asbestos-related companies before the year 1972, and were not actually involved in asbestos-related work after they became successors to the companies. The bill provides that a corporation that is an innocent successor to a corporation that carried asbestos-related liability is only subject to liability up to the fair market value of the total gross assets of the original corporation that carried the liability as of the date the corporation merged and consolidated. The bill does not apply to workers' compensation benefits. A claim against the corporation that does not constitute a successor asbestos-related liability, an obligation under the National Labor Relations Act, or a collective bargaining agreement, or a successor corporation that continued in the asbestos business after the merger or the consolidation.
Is there any further questions regarding this particular bill? Yes, Senator Lentz.
Chairman, Senator Perry, could you help me understand what in the bill would prevent essentially a shell corporation transaction that would be designed to shield the liability rather than be an honest purchase of another corporation?
Sir Perry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Latz, you're talking to a person that is not an attorney. And as I recall, that question was asked last year, and I had a testifier here that could answer that. But for me personally, I can't remember, nor do I have a copy of the bill with me today. So I can't answer that question for you specifically.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perry, I think part of it is if you look on the top of page 2, line 3, the definition of innocent successor refers to somebody who became a successor before January 1, 1972. So that kind of narrows the scope of the kind of entities that would be protected by the bill.
So, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bonnie was then a company that today we're seeking protection under this bill, this statutory change, if it would become law, would not be able to avail itself of those protections. XYZ Corporation today went out and bought another company that had some asbestos-related liabilities attached to it. They would not benefit from this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, that's my reading of it. I don't know if anybody in the audience has something to add.
Senator Perry?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that this is for any companies prior to 1972. And as I recall some of the testimony from last year, Senator Latz, there was discussion specifically on that. And because we did get into some deep discussions about buying a company knowing that there was hazardous materials, but this was prior to the knowledge of asbestos-related claims or being injurious to people, as I recall that testimony last year. So we did discuss that, and my recollection is that this is before 1972, because there was that period of time, and I think you were pretty straightforward about asking about that period of time before all these claims started happening. Was there knowledge prior to? And we went through that, and that's where we came up with the date on this.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Letts.
My recollection of the testimony from the last hearing was that there was actual documentary evidence that was presented by the lawyers representing victims that the company, the purchasing company, had it done its due diligence, would actually have known that there was asbestos-related liability and injuries in connection with this. And my recollection also is that this date was picked in large part so that it would benefit a specific corporation, Crown Cork, and that was the motivation behind this bill. So it seemed to me that we're in a position here of considering whether a law change is good enough to apply to across the board to any companies, or if it's designed to specially benefit basically one company. And it's assuming some facts that, frankly, were not supported by the evidence in terms of knowledge or no prior knowledge. Mr. Chairman, I also have another question for Senator Perry, if I might.
Go ahead, Senator.
Senator Perry, has there been any update in the information since we heard this bill a year ago in terms of the status of asbestos claims, litigation relating to asbestos claims, liability of companies, any changes in case law legal evidence that might be related to asbestos claims that would help inform the committee whether or not we should pass this bill again this year?
Chair Perry?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, I have not been updated or giving any information as to whether there has been any changes of any kind of significance between our hearing last year and now.
Senator Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been a while since we talked about this bill, but I did defend asbestos claims for a number of years in a former life, and I think, Senator Latz, one of the reasons that the 1970s was picked, and I don't know about this particular year, that was about the time when medical research got to the point that there was an understanding of the danger associated with asbestos. So I think there were two parts to this. One was the date was selected because there really became a lot more knowledge later after we got into the 70s, into the 80s. And then as far as the liability tale, let's remember that this is simply companies that didn't actually ever end up operating in the field of asbestos. It's companies that happened to acquire an organization that had done it before and didn't actually engage in the business that posed the risk to the individuals involved. So I think though, you know, that's why you're looking at the 1970s.
Mr. Chairman?
Any further question? Yes, Senator Latz.
Before I forget, I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
A roll call will be conducted.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to again oppose this bill. I think it would behoove us to hear from the affected parties again to determine whether or not there have been any changes in either the legal landscape or the evidentiary landscape that might help this committee decide whether it's appropriate in January 2012 to pass this bill. I don't know. Senator Perry hasn't indicated that he's spoken even with at least those who might have been opposed to the bill to see if they have any new information that we might wish to consider, let alone give an opportunity for a hearing on those matters. But this it seems to me that companies that buy other companies have a duty to find out what they're purchasing. And we had the evidence that had they done their due diligence, the records from the acquired company here itself would have shown there were asbestos-related liability that the purchasing company should have known about. And if you're going to buy it, you're not innocent, really. So I'm going to oppose the bill, and I encourage members of the committee to oppose the bill as well.
Senator Latz, I was looking over the notes of this discussion. We had a rather robust discussion last year about this. I believe one company merged two companies together. And when they merged the companies, even though they didn't make a previous product before they merged the two companies, they would be on the hook for a liability that happened many, many years ago. And I think that's the question that Senator Perry is trying to better define. And in its definition, try to assert where the proper liability should eventually lie. This is one option in trying to resolve that or put in place. And I remember we had a quite robust discussion about it. You had asked for a roll call vote then, too. And so I don't know if we're going to actually learn anything of any new information, when I doubt if there has been any new information regarding the individual setting or the circumstances of this particular bill. But I'm prepared to move forward with the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're not going to have the opportunity to find out if there's any new information, since all we have is the author of the bill without any witnesses or any information relating to the bill. I think procedurally it would have been helpful to be able to have that information. And the question is, are we extinguishing real opportunity for recovery for the victims of asbestos-related injuries or not with something like a bill like this? I'm not comfortable shielding corporations from these kinds of transactions.
All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor? Oh, roll call will be announced.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Hall.
Yes.
Senator Goodwin.
No.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Jungbauer.
Yes.
Senator Ortman.
Yes.
Senator Latz.
No.
Senator Newman.
Yes.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes.
Senator McGuire.
No.
Senator Harrington.
No.
As a result of a vote 8-5, the motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
The next bill is Senate File 1586. That happens to be my bill. And so I'll be giving the gavel to Senator Newman, and I'll get to work presenting. Chairman.
Senator Limmer, you ready to proceed?
Yes, I am.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1586 is a bill attempting to deal with what we believe is a growing problem with intentional neglect of a vulnerable adult. The bill before you would make intentional neglect of a vulnerable adult a felony, and one must keep in mind that even with the most atrocious act of neglect that could happen to an individual in this category, in a category like this, we do not have any type of felony response to even the most atrocious acts of neglect for a vulnerable adult. This bill is an attempt to fill an important missing piece in that current law, and it does work hand in hand with the continuum of response that we have toward the misuse of vulnerable adults in the state of Minnesota. As our elderly and adult population continues to grow, especially with the growing baby boom population that's now just beginning, we're on the cusp of that now affecting everything in how we assert our business, our budgeting in the state and federal government. This, too, is also a growing burden on the states and on the federal government as well. As the population grows, our vulnerable adult population grows, and the propensity to have growing abuse in that population area is also going to grow. I have a number of people here that are willing to talk about the bill, but before I get there, I would like to let you know that we are establishing a felony charge, 10 years if it is a great bodily harm, and 5 years if it's substantial bodily harm. Believe it or not, Minnesota is only one of five states that do not have any addressing of this type of abuse against our vulnerable adult population. And as a surprise to me, for many years, Minnesota has felony application for the intentional neglect of animals, but it remains silent on human beings. And I find that rather surprising with a state that certainly does have a great pride about taking care of our elderly, taking care of our vulnerable adults, the very people that we would claim to be the most needy in our society, and yet we do not have a heavy hand to deal with those individuals that would abuse a vulnerable adult in this fashion. I think I'm going to introduce Iris Freeman first. Is that okay?
Sure.
And she can further explain the need for such a bill.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Ms. Freeman, if you would state your name for the record, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Iris Freeman. I'm Associate Director of the Center for Elder Justice and Policy at William Mitchell College of Law. My professional training is in social work, and I've worked for 35 years to protect vulnerable adults from abuse, neglect, and exploitation. That tenure lets me tell you that our laws for vulnerable adult protection are comparatively new, newer than the laws related to mistreatment of animals or to children or to domestic situations. When I began in the 1970s, Minnesota didn't even have so much as a law that required reports of adult abuse to authorities. That came later. And experts around the country looking at similar histories say that the recognition of and response to vulnerable adult abuse, neglect, etc., trails the progress in child protection and domestic violence response by decades. In the past several years, though, Minnesota has made good strides in updating protection systems and criminal laws, especially those focused on financial exploitation. Today, we move toward adding a critical missing piece in the criminal code, a higher penalty for intentional neglect that results in pronounced physical harm to the victim. We are talking about victims who are deprived of the most basic food and water, wound care, pain medicine, often people who are locked away, out of sight, out of earshot, and in the worst cases, left to rot. Most tragically, these situations typically occur in such isolation that nobody makes a report or calls for help, certainly not in time to rescue the victim. These are the cases where a so-called caregiver doesn't deserve a noble name like caregiver. They should more aptly be called captors. And that is the point. This is not about caregiver error, human errors, accidents, the kinds of emergencies that always come in pairs when you're trying to take care of more than one person. These are the cases at the margins. Minnesota is not alone in the challenge, but it is among the very few states, one of five, that have such limited tools for responding to intentional neglect of people who cannot protect themselves. The majority of these cases do occur at home. The subject is just part of a much larger discussion that we have about how do we assure people aging, that people who are aging with disabilities and limited by dementia have some choices and some privacy in their lives while still being safe from the harm that is caused by someone else's malicious choices and own self-interest. This legislation has been a long time coming, and so I thank you for making this the year to enact serious consequences in the cases that shock our consciences. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman. Members, I think what I'm going to do is we'll go through the witnesses that we have at the table with Senator Limmer. And then if you have any questions, we will certainly come back to them. So your next testifier, Senator Limmer?
Mr. Brown from Hennepin County.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Brown. If you would state your name for the record, and then please proceed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, members of the committee, thank you very much. I am David Brown. I am a senior assistant Hennepin County attorney. I'm here on behalf of the elected county attorney, Mike Freeman, who together with Senator Limmer and a number of others has brought this initiative forward. I know I've spoken to a number of you, and the notion of protecting our most vulnerable adults is one of the most important things that we can do. I want to just touch on the bill that's in front of you. We have, in crafting this legislation, not attempted to change the definition of what constitutes criminal neglect. It requires intentional neglect or the knowing permission of conditions to exist. And what that means from a prosecutor's perspective is this isn't about accidents or mistakes, as Ms. Freeman talked about, but is instead intentional neglect. And the reason we're bringing this forward is because a couple of cases come forward a year where the result of that intentional neglect is horrific. And right now, the penalty from a prosecutor's perspective is simply inadequate to deal with the harm that's been caused here. And so we thank Senator Limmer for his leadership in bringing this to the Senate and very much look forward to your support for this important bill. I have with me one of our most experienced prosecutors, Amy Sweezy, who is a senior attorney in our criminal division. She is a trial team supervisor and one of our very best prosecutors who is extremely experienced here, and I will let her speak to the details as to why this is needed. So on behalf of Mike Freeman, I want to say thank you to the members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Sweezy. If you'd state your name, pull the microphone up nice and close.
Okay. Thank you,
and
Mr. Chairman
proceed.
And members. It's a pleasure to be here to speak about this. What I can provide is a little bit of perspective from a prosecutor's standpoint about what we see, what we don't see, and what we're looking to accomplish with this bill. In Hennepin County, the county attorney's office where I work handles felony prosecutions and some very limited gross misdemeanors. As such, ironically, I am not a prosecutor who prosecutes the intentional neglect of vulnerable adult cases now because it is a gross misdemeanor. As I'm sure you know, the maximum penalties for a gross misdemeanor are 2 years probation and 365 days in jail. What we have found in reviewing the cases in the state of Minnesota over the last 11 years was that there is a very large gap between the conduct that ought to be punished by a gross misdemeanor statute and that which is sometimes punished by a gross misdemeanor statute that is far more egregious. What we did was to go back and pull the complaints filed statewide for the gross misdemeanor neglect of a vulnerable adult charge from the years 2000 through 2011. We compiled those, and I reviewed them with an eye toward, as a felony prosecutor, if these cases were coming across my desk, what would I be looking at in terms for felony charges if we had the felony language that's in the bill in front of you today? And here's what I found. Of the 118 cases filed statewide over those 11 years, 34 of them fell into a category that struck me as appropriate, at least for review of felony prosecution, if not charges and seeing it through, but at least as at first blush, they stood apart so much more from their counterparts in the rest of that 118 cases that we think it provides very good evidence for why this kind of a law is needed. One in particular, I think, provides a very good example. It is an Olmsted County case from 2001. And I think this one is the best illustrated because it's a case that was filed, prosecuted, had a jury trial, and had a judge administer a sentence. So we can see at all levels of a prosecution how this kind of a crime is treated under current law in the state of Minnesota. The victim was an elderly woman with dementia who was being cared for by her sister-in-law. That was an informal relationship that they had together, but in any event, she was the caregiver. The caregiver brought the victim to the emergency room, and the doctors noted that she had toenails that were 3 inches long. Her hair was matted into a turban that she wore and had to be shaved off to be removed. She had infections deep into the tissue of her bones, and forgive me, but there's no other way to say that she had bed sores that were infested with maggots. The caregiver told the doctors that the victim had fallen and broken her hip 1 year earlier, but that she was unable to get the victim to the hospital and that the victim simply had been at home in this condition with a hip fracture and obviously these other conditions that either existed at the time or at a minimum became worse. That case went to trial in Olmsted County in 2001. A gross misdemeanor jury of 6 persons found the caregiver guilty of neglect of a vulnerable adult. That was a gross misdemeanor charge. The sentence imposed in that case was no jail time and a $100 fine. Members of the committee. Sorry.
Guilty.
We'll try to forgive.
I agree, Senator.
Sorry about that. Guess I only have one speed, but. The $100 fine, as all of you know, most speeding tickets cost more than that now. And we think that that case is really, really tells us something about how our law treats this. Certainly, many people receive stiffer penalties for lesser gross misdemeanors, driving offenses, and things of that nature. As Mr. Brown said, the bill that we're supporting, it's the same crime that's in place now. So it's already a crime, it's just that it's only a gross misdemeanor. We are not changing the language of the elements of the crime, the proof that's required, because we think it's very adequate in terms of what it requires us to prove and sending a clear message to what conduct is prohibited. We don't see any fault in that. The fault that we do see is what happened in the 2001 case, where you have a very life-threatening condition that is brought about by the failure to act of a caregiver who did so intentionally, who could have gotten medical attention, who simply could have called 911 at any time and made the intentional choice not to. As Ms. Freeman said, we're not talking about mistakes. We are talking about choice here. That in these caregiver relationships, which are voluntarily assumed, if you take on that relationship, you have a responsibility to that.
Thank you, Ms. Sweezy, for that testimony. Senator Limmer, I see that Mr. Freeman has arrived. Please have a seat at the table, Mr. Freeman. I assume you wish to address us, so please state your name in full. And,
thank you.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Michael Freeman, the Hennepin County attorney and a proud alumnus of the Minnesota Senate. In fact, Senator Marty, you are sitting in my seat. I'll be there shortly.
Senator Marty's seat now.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. I apologize for being late. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Seated Chairman, you are breaking the Senate rules for Senate time by starting on time. Thank you. I know that Senior Assistant County Attorney Amy Sweezy, who is one heck of a prosecutor, I'm not surprised she addressed you as a jury. That's what she does, and she does well. And our legislative person, Dave Brown, has been here. Let me just say, members, that having had the privilege of sitting in your seat, let me try to capsulize briefly your closing argument to your constituencies and the other groups that care about this piece of legislation. We do not change the burden of proof. We do not change the elements of the crime. We still have to prove intentional neglect, which is not a mistake, which is not an error, which protects individual workers, such as our brothers and sisters who work in nursing homes or our siblings who care for folks at home. It also requires knowingly permitting conditions to exist, which protects our nursing homes and institutions. Knowingly permitting. That isn't an accident. That isn't a mistake. That's a deliberate action. And when we have to prove that to a jury of our peers beyond a reasonable doubt, that's a big, high standard. What we are changing here and asking your help is something that's long overdue. And as Amy Sweezy told you, the penalty is simply inadequate. A gross misdemeanor, no time, and a $100 fine just doesn't reflect the seriousness of the crime. I mean, we have a 2-year felony for cruelty to animals if we cause great bodily harm to animals. We have a 5-year felony for neglect of a child that results in substantial bodily harm. And the definition, which includes physical, mental, or emotional health, is less of a standard than what exists here today. But what we're asking for is if the harm that is caused reaches the level of substantial bodily harm, it deserves to be a 5-year felony. If the harm that comes is a great bodily harm, it deserves a 10-year felony. That's really what I can say to you. We have 3 to 5 cases a year, but you know something? Justice kind of calls out for us to do something about that. And very thankful for Chairman Limmer, who actually is one of the few who was serving in this legislature in those ancient days when I was here, for his assistance. And I encourage you to pass this committee and send it to the floor. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Chair, I also did not point out that's also in your packet quite a few letters of support that you may want to read in your leisure. They include the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, Center for Elder Justice and Policy, ARP, Tubman Elder Care, Wright Center, Minnesota Board of Aging, the Area Agencies on Aging, Ombudsman for Long-Term Care, Ombudsman for Mental Health and Development Disabilities, the Disability Law Center, and the St. Thomas Law School Senior Clinic faculty and students, for the record, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Limmer. Members have any question of any of the 4 testifiers, or Senator Limmer, for that matter? Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome back to the committee, County Attorney Freeman. It's fun to see you. So if I'm just understanding this, I just want to be clear. So we have behavior that is now a gross misdemeanor that we're going to make a felony, but we're going to keep the same behavior. So is there a different behavior then that would be a gross misdemeanor, or how would that work? So there's no behavior that would be a gross misdemeanor at this point?
Mr. Chairman, Senator McGuire, thank you.
Mr. Freeman.
If the harm that is caused by the same conduct that exists in the statute today does not rise to the level of substantial bodily harm or great bodily harm, it will still be a misdemeanor. And so the vast majority of cases we see just don't rise to this level. And frankly, we prosecutors are not out looking for these cases. You know, what we're trying to do is only step up when the conduct is really severe. All this changes in existing law is to say if the harm caused reaches the level of substantial bodily harm, it's a 5-year felony. If the harm caused reaches the level of great bodily harm, it's a 10-year felony. And let me assure you, not only do we have to prove that the conduct was intentional negligence, we also have to prove that that intentional negligence caused the harm. So that's two big things. We've got to prove the definition of intentional negligence. We have to prove causation. And as the lawyers here and know, that's additional step that is a difficult one to pass, and it should be. We're talking about taking somebody's liberty for doing horrible things, and accordingly, we meet that burden and we welcome it.
One thing I might add, Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer,
is that since this is a criminal matter that we're talking about, the evidentiary standard, just for the members that may not be familiar, one would have to prove this beyond a reasonable doubt, just like any other criminal charge that we would have on the books. So the standard is, for proof, rather high.
Any other questions for the testifier? Senator Youngbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for anybody who wants to answer, as I'm looking through things here under the 5-year felony and the definition of substantial bodily harm, we get to the end of that definition, it says, or which causes a fracture of any bodily member. I'm kind of thinking through some of these things, so that I have some issues with the way we look at things. My sister runs 3 group homes for traumatic brain injury, and it's pretty easy for one of these folks to end up falling or otherwise where they can get a hairline fracture. It appears that those kind of issues would then potentially be chargeable under a felony, and I guess I'm pretty concerned about those kind of issues. Can somebody help relieve my concerns there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Youngbauer, I appreciate your concern. And let me give an illustration of sitting in your chairs trying to craft criminal statutes narrowly so we only cause a penalty for the real harm that's occurred. When push comes to shove, some of that has to be the discretion of the prosecutor. 4 times since I've been county attorney, we've been faced with a situation that one person with Alzheimer has pushed, shoved, attacked another person with Alzheimer. We have never brought those cases. And the most recent famous one was wrestler Vern Gagne, who was kind of harassed by another person with dementia and turned and pushed him. He didn't put him in his fame clutch hold, he just pushed him. He fell down, he broke a hip, went to the hospital. 10 days later, he died of pneumonia. I personally reviewed that case and did not charge it because Vern Gagne didn't have the capacity to commit that crime. He didn't have the mens rea. He didn't have the intent to do that. In a similar fashion, if it is an accident and a person falls, and it doesn't matter how vulnerable they are, and breaks a leg, we're not going to charge it. This is intentional neglect. This is a period of time. This is leaving a person in their depends for 3 weeks without changing them. This is having maggots in your wounds. This is having feces, you know, on the plate that they eat from. This is really, really bad stuff. And, you know, I appreciate what you struggle to do is to write things so only the most egregious conduct becomes criminal. But sometimes push comes to shove. It's got to be within the conduct of the prosecutor who reads the statute. We're not, again, asking to enhance or change the intentional neglect. That's in the statute. We're seeking only to enhance the penalty.
It's okay for now.
Any other questions? Senator Lass.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was listening to Ms. Swayze's testimony and noted perplexed why the judge had up to a year available as a sentence. In case you're only sentencing someone to no jail time at all,
had up to a $3,000 fine available as a penalty. We only fined $100. So sometimes that's related to ability to pay as much as anything else. I thought it important to clarify, however, that that was up to the judge's discretion as to how to sentence the case. And while we might all disagree that the law that we're involved in setting did allow for far more serious punishment under those circumstances, and there's nothing we'll be able to do to change a judge's discretion when they're evaluating those kind of sentencing decisions. What I was trying to figure out, as you distinguish between the 118, I think it was, cases you reviewed and the 34 that you found were most egregious, what was different in the conduct that was involved? Not the harm that resulted, but the conduct.
Ms. Sweezy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, what was obvious in the 34 cases that stood out to me was that most of the others had to do primarily with a lack of supervision. A pattern that presented with some regularity in the other cases involved overnight workers at group homes who left and went to the bar, those sorts of things, people leaving their posts. In the 34 cases, there was something different about the conduct. It was a choice not to administer medication. It was a choice not to call 911 when someone wasn't breathing and had an order to be resuscitated. It was a choice, like the Olmsted County case, to let someone languish for a year without medical care. In those 34 cases, the more common, first of all, there was always the significant harm, but the conduct that led to it was more serious and went more to the issue of the care and the treatment of the disabilities of the vulnerable adults, more so than simple supervision. There's also, in the larger group of cases, a lot of cases that have to do with driving, and some similarities to what we see in cases with children, where vulnerable adults are left in hot or cold cars. That was the kind of conduct that was more, in my opinion, easily identifiable as what the gross misdemeanor statute was. These 34 had to do with issues really relating to choices that withheld something that was necessary to preserve the health of the vulnerable adult, more so than supervision.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Letts.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Swayze, so in your analysis, then, all of the cases that you reviewed, was the total 118?
That's right.
Okay. So of the 118, 34 were more egregious.
Yep.
So of the 118, in your judgment, all of them, the conduct in all of them constituted neglect or intentional neglect under the statutory definition. Am I understanding you correctly?
Ms. Swayze.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes. The one thing I must add is that I was reviewing the complaints. Obviously, I did not review the police reports in every case, so I'm going off language of something that was charged by another prosecutor. But, yes, that was what I found.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lett.
Ms. Swayze, I would welcome your suggestions if there were a way to somehow define the conduct itself in a way that would help get toward the more serious or egregious level of misconduct or intent that would distinguish these kinds of cases. Because if we're applying one statutory definition to that whole range of conduct, the concern that I have is that what we really want to punish, and I think probably all of us in this room want to punish at a felony level the most egregious conduct and the most egregious intent. How do we draw that distinction in statute other than just measuring the outcome, the harm that results?
Ms. Sweezy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Letts, as you well know, intentionality is defined in statute, but it's also defined in thousands of cases. Neglect is the same. And intention, it is very difficult to redefine in a particular criminal statute phrases like intentional neglect. It would be very difficult. Knowingly permit, knowingly is also a word, as you well know, has a whole lot of statutory definition, but also has a lot of case law definition. And we prosecutors have a real hard time with tinkering with the definitions. I think we feel comfortable that this language is such that it both provides the public the degree of protection they deserve, but also the employees in the institutions the protection they deserve in a very difficult area. So we're not uncomfortable with the intentional neglect language and knowingly permit. If you all are uncomfortable, and I understand if you may be that way, you know, that's your business. But we're comfortable at least with those terms. What we're not comfortable with is the lack of significant penalty for the most egregious conduct.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my question is for Senator Limmer or maybe even counsel here. But I noticed that the description by Chris Turner talks about substantial bodily harm, and it even includes a fracture of any bodily member. So if I'm understanding it right, somebody could end up 5 years in jail if they had prison, if they had three patients at the same time that were all needing care, and somebody jumped or fell out of their bed because they didn't get their call responded to right away. That's my concern, is that that could be described by somebody as intentional bodily injury, or if somebody fell in the bathroom while even the person was attending to them and they fractured a limb or something like that. That seems to me far different than your description of great bodily harm or the current statute's description of that. So I am concerned about that for the healthcare worker, that it's not so broadly defined that too many people could fit into this category that don't really belong there.
Senator,
that's my concern, and I don't know who wants to respond to that, but please do.
I don't think you need a social worker responding to it.
We're going to let anyone who wants to respond to it. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Goodwin, you raise a good question, but the point to remember is the intention of the actor. Is the person intentionally neglecting an individual? And in the course of the occupation, we know there are times when a worker is got a lot of things going on at the same time. There's a multitasking going on. That would not be intentional neglect. And I think if perhaps Mr. Freeman or Ms. Sweeney could add to that, but I think I'm right in how you would look at that. And you raise a valid question about that. Mr. Freeman, could you make a comment?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, Senator Goodwin, we're not talking about one occasion. Intentional neglect, to prove intentional neglect, we've got to do much more than that. Okay, a person, this is not an accident, this is not a mistake, this is intentional neglect. That requires a degree of deliberateness. And deliberateness is defined, in my view at least, is certainly more than one incident. Your example of, you know, a worker who has three folks and there are three alarms going at the same time and picks to go to one and number two falls out of bed, that's not even close to intentional neglect. Intentional neglect in that situation is if that person had done the buzzer 8 times in the preceding 5 hours, and that person had ignored them through shift changes and failure to going to have coffee and schmoozing with coworkers. You know, that gets to that point. But, you know, a person making a decision, that's not neglect, and it's certainly not intentionality. And I know sometimes, I understand, you know, because I've met with the folks from SEIU, and I've met with the folks from a couple of the other unions that were concerned about this. We shared and talked with them about the level of intentional neglect and the deliberateness. Okay, I think they felt more comfortable. We've had discussions with the care providers in the nursing homes about knowingly permitting conditions. That's not one incident. That's not one short staff of one night because people called in sick. That's a level of consistency that we have to prove. Because the bottom line is we have to look a group of folks in the face just like we're looking at you, but it's called a jury, and we have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. I think there's lots of protection for those folks.
A follow-up to that, Mr. Chair?
Senator Goodley.
Let's look at the scenario. I have a loved one in the nursing home. I'm a state senator. I have my mother in a nursing home. And somebody messes up when they put her on the pot, and she's too heavy for them to carry, so they end up with a cracked limb. I'm furious. It's my mother. And so I'm going to go to you, Mike Freeman, or somebody else, and say, this person caused great bodily harm to my mother, and you're going to have to respond to that. And under this statute, you know, I mean, there would be circumstances where the family could make complaints and try to get a prosecution based on substantial bodily harm. And that, indeed, would end the career of the aide or whatever. I really like this, and I've got a lot of elderly people in my district in 5 nursing homes, and I feel really strongly about vulnerable adults. And just 2 years ago, my aunt died in Wisconsin in an assisted living home, and she was raped and she was beaten, and no case ever came against that home. So that was really hard. I do want this vulnerable adult legislation. I really do want it. I just want to make sure that in the process here we don't have people that are scooped up in this that are too heavily punished for doing their job. It's the toughest job you'll ever want. I know that from high school when I did it, but it's the most difficult job I've ever done in my life, and it's very taxing, and big decisions have to be made in a little amount of time. So I understand about the cases you're talking about, and they're horrible, and they definitely should be prosecuted, and they just definitely should be in prison, those folks. I'm just concerned about this, the broadness of it, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, I'm sorry. We all have loved ones, and seeing my own father in a nursing home, you better believe I was looking over their shoulders a lot. Frankly, just to bring clarity to this discussion, I couldn't charge the situation you said about your mother. It's one occasion, and unless there was a level of deliberateness that I didn't hear from you, that's just simply not enough. Now, we do have the criminal justice system is simply not the place to solve many of society's ills. That's the, you know, facility in the Board of Health Facilities Oversight, that's the nursing boards, that's all those other boards that frankly do a very good job of that. And every care facility doesn't want that to happen either. You know, what I think we say in the criminal justice system is we're only looking for the most egregious situations. And in this situation, repeat egregious situations. And those people deserve to be prosecuted. And if they cause this kind of harm, they deserve to get some time and not just a fine.
Senator Limmer, did you have something?
Ms. Freeman.
Ms. Freeman?
Mr. Chairman and members, just quickly. Caregivers who are trying to do many things at once may also be family members in the family home. Any one of us who has taken care of both an elderly mom and dad at the very same time may remember, as I do, the day my dad broke his finger because I was getting my mother in the car to go to the hospital. There was no intent. I want to believe that in that jurisdiction as well, no one would be scooping up a well-meaning family caregiver for the fact that a fracture occurred in an instant. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, there's other people that would like to make comment on the bill. And maybe what we could do is have the discussion continue after the other witnesses come forward. These are people that are perhaps opposed to the legislation.
Yeah, and we will. I do have Senator Youngbauer, the only other senator, had a question. I don't know if you want to go with one of these witnesses or if it...
Well, Mr. Chair, yes, I guess it would be with these witnesses and kind of on the same line of probably Senator Goodwin and Senator Latz. So I'll defer it to you, though, Senator Limmer, if you think we should wait till... I can bring them all back up and grill them.
Sure.
Later,
sure.
If you need.
All right, then we will defer at this point. Are there any other witnesses that want to testify in favor of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman, Ms. Sweezy. Seeing none, I do have Mr. Goodnow, who is here to testify. If you want to approach the testifying table. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and thank you, Senator Limmer, for bringing this bill forward. My name is Kevin Goodnow, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Home Care Association, and in that role I'm also representing other providers of services to people who are elderly and disabled. The group that I'm representing includes the Minnesota Home Care Association, the Association of Residential Services, Residential Resources, of Minnesota, which are group homes and providers of residential services for people with developmental disabilities and other disabilities, a long-term care imperative, which includes the nursing home facilities, the Minnesota Hospital Association, which of course represents the hospitals. The Minnesota Home Care Association is relatively unique among those groups in the sense that we don't have facilities where we're treating people or providing services, that we're helping people with services to keep them and maintain them in their homes. And so I just want to make sure that you're aware it's just not about an institutional situation where you have 24/7 care, but it also expands out beyond that where people are potentially able to be charged under the statute or this legislative change. First of all, I want to say that, sometimes you are asked to testify or want to testify in a bill that you're supportive of, but you have concerns about. And I think that this is one of those that we fall into that category. We do support a felony level of neglect charge for people who are neglecting vulnerable adults. We do have concerns with the current language and specifically with the standards that are applied to the individual caregivers versus the standards that are applied to the operators or facilities as well. We think there are different roles, and neglect looks differently depending upon if it's the operator or facility versus the individual caregiver. And we would like to see a distinction made between those two. It's not lessening the standard, but applying the relative standard, the right standard, to the facility operator versus the individual caregiver. And I just wanted to note that the testifiers in support of the bill keep talking about the deliberateness of the action, the intentionality of the action. But if you look at the statute itself, it talks about intentionally neglects a vulnerable adult, which is typically what you would apply to an individual caregiver, or knowingly permits conditions to exist. And that's typically where the facility and operator would be pulled in. And so it doesn't require the intentional or deliberateness. It requires the knowingly. And the permits, the conditions to exist, that's a question, too, that's a gray area. And we do agree that there needs to be discretion within the prosecutors. But, when we heard the prosecutors up here talking, they were talking about having to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. So that already implies that you're in court incurring in a system where it's adversarial, trying to prove that you're guilty of a felony. What we're concerned is the charge to begin with. Because when there's a charge made against an individual caregiver or against a facility or an operator, that impacts the reputation. And even if the charge is never proven, all of a sudden you have that record on that person's record. It's also a record and also something that can be researched with regard to the operator and facility. So just the charge itself has an immense impact on the caregivers and the facilities that are out there. And it's easy to level charges. And I know the prosecutors don't like to use that. And I'd like to believe that all the prosecutors, when they use their discretion, use the level of discretion that Mr. Freeman has expressed that he and his folks do. But you know what? There's an awful lot of prosecutors in the state. Some are county product prosecutors. Some are actually city prosecutors that might go after the gross misdemeanor charges. They have a variety of issues. They have a variety of knowledge. Some knowledge is really great, and they really hold themselves to a high standard. And I would say that I think we can all admit that some people don't hold themselves to as high a standard. And it's those folks that we're concerned about. Because when they charge out a case against an operator, and if they don't have to prove that there's actually been a crime committed by the individual caregiver, the consequences for an operator is that any time there's a conviction related to a neglect of a vulnerable adult, they're automatically excluded from the Medicare and Medicaid programs. And if depending upon what level of the facility or operator you charge out, that could have consequences within an entire system. So if you look at the larger nursing home systems, or for in our example, a lot of the home care agencies are parts of a larger hospital or healthcare system out there. that you would impact that of their ability to provide services under Medicaid and Medicare. That alone and that threat really does raise a level of scrutiny that needs to be used before you charge out those crimes against an operator, because that puts the whole system in potential disarray. And just on a final note, and this is unique to the relative care, to the home care folks, that in the disability world, in the frail adult and elderly world, there's a tension between wanting to keep people in their homes and out of facilities, and making sure they're protected, but giving them the freedom to be individuals and not be in a facility-based setting. As you give them more freedom, you have the challenge of making sure you have enough protections in place to make sure that they're protected while they have that freedom, but you're also allowing for some things to happen. And so in some cases, if you are too punitive in some areas or there's too much of a risk from the provider perspective, they may say, you know, these programs that are more flexible for people, that don't give as much oversight and give them more flexibility, we may not have to be able to operate because it goes too far. The risk is too great for us to absorb in that setting. So I just wanted to point that out, members of the committee. I appreciate your consideration. We're committed to working with the author of the bill and other people who are supporters of the bill as the bill moves its way through the process. We do support the felony level of a crime here, but we do think there needs to be a change in the standard that when you're charging out against operators and the facilities themselves. Mr. Chair, I stand for any questions.
Senator Thompson. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Goodnow, I have a question about how perhaps this legislation could be tweaked to meet your approval. And I think, you know, it seems to me this is one of those pieces of legislation that everybody has the same goal, and that is to hold people responsible at a very high level that should be held responsible and not have negative consequences for folks who have done nothing wrong. Have you been able to speak with the proponents of the bill at all to see if language could be crafted to address the concerns on all sides, or is that something that hasn't happened yet?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, a while ago, months ago, we had discussions that went on and trying to meet a compromise or reach a compromise with regard to the language of the bill. Both sides, I think it's safe to say, were just kind of set in where they wanted to go, and we weren't able to reach a compromise. Since the bill has been introduced, we haven't had that opportunity. I know that we do have the meeting scheduled for next week to start working on a potential compromise with this language. The results of that, I'm not sure where that's going to go. But what we're looking for is, I won't go into the details of what we're looking for, but we know that both sides, we're going to have to give on some of the concerns that we had months ago. I'm assuming that the other side, if we're working in meaningful and good faith negotiations, will also understand that as well. We're not looking to lessen the charge. We're looking at what it takes in order to be charged out at a felony and a gross misdemeanor.
Thank you.
Members have any other questions for Mr. Goodnow? Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if I have so much a question, but a comment with regards to your testimony, Mr. Goodnow. I would certainly think, and I was glad to hear that you ended your remarks with supporting the felony statute here. We're making this a felony situation, but I was concerned when you seemed like you were somewhat a little bit more concerned about what the outlook or what the liability for the business community would do to that. I would also wonder what the what the folks in the community or in the business would think of somebody who didn't want this rectified, a business that would allow this to happen. So I'm glad you ended your comments by saying you were in support of it, but there certainly is another side to the two, that if a company is known to be the ones that turn their head to this kind of a thing, would certainly be a negative connotation to your business. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'll just point out that I started my comments with saying we're supported the felony neglect and ended it. And you're right. With the members of my association, I know it's true for the other associations as well. With any organization, with any group, you have bad actors. And we don't like the bad actors because those are the folks that get the attention. They have the reporters go out. They're the examples that are used at legislative hearings. and they result in laws that sometimes have unintended consequences. And that's the thing that we're concerned about. We want to go after the bad actors. We want the prosecutors to be able to go to the bad actors, after the bad actors, and prosecute them. But we want to make sure that we have targeted language to the concern that we have in hand that doesn't have the unintended consequences, that may have broader ramifications and may get the good actors, where there have been errors or mistakes made, caught up in that language. So, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I absolutely appreciate your comments, and I agree with those. And that's the challenge of my coming up here and testifying on behalf of organizations that are businesses, and a lot of nonprofits, is that we don't want to minimize the fact that we care about the people we serve. We wouldn't be in this business if we didn't care about them.
That's right. Thanks. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Goodenough? Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Goodenough.
You, Mr. Chair,
any other individuals?
Mr. Chairman, I just had a question for the author or one of the original witnesses.
Senator Marty, if you could hold just one moment.
Sure.
Are there any other individuals in the audience that wish to testify against the bill? Seeing none, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, and maybe Mr. Freeman, I think the bill is aimed clearly, and I think you, at least Hennepin County, intends, and I hope all the counties would intend to only prosecute the bad apples, the bad actors, the ones who are intending harm. And as we know, there's a lot of discretion on your part that has to do that. What I'm wondering is, in a lot of cases, it's things that one could, I mean, it's almost willful or knowing neglect if we, if an employee in a facility or a facility does not have enough staff on duty to do it on a routine basis, which does tie to funding, which ties to us and everything else. But if a worker or a facility that's kind of not trying to do harm, they wouldn't be one you'd call a bad facility or something, but their corners have been cut and so on. How do you deal with that? And is there anything, I mean, I know this bill isn't aimed at that, and I don't think it should be, but I'm wondering about lots of cases where in a facility where they've cut corners because of cost, maybe having no choice but to do that, either for the employee or the facility, or in a home care setting where the person doesn't have the wherewithal or ability to be taking care of the person they are. Is there anything we can do about that? This bill isn't really aimed at that, but one, how do we make sure we're not prosecuting those folks?
Senator Limmer?
I'm going to move to
Ms. Sweezy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Marty, can you just clarify? I at the end, I got a little bit confused.
In other words,
Senator Marty,
I know this is not aimed at getting somebody who's working, let's say, in a nursing home or something, and has three patients calling out for them, and they're only one person, and they are intentionally neglecting two of the three, not because they're doing the wrong thing, but because they don't have a choice. How do we make sure they're not hurt by that, and is there anything we can do to address the broader situation that causes that in a facility and in a individual home? Supposing you have an adult, maybe one who's not fully capable of doing so, trying to take care of a parent, not malicious type of thing, but how do you as a prosecutor separate those out, and is there anything we can do about the other cases too?
Ms. Sweezy.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senator, sometimes I think that can be separated out, and sometimes it can't. Getting back to Senator Goodwin's question, we in criminal law, we love to define everything. And when we talk about the intent element that we talked about so much, our criminal jury instruction guides tell us that that means to act with the purpose to. So I am acting with the purpose to neglect. If I have two things to take care of and I can't get, or my main goal is to get someone to the toilet very quickly, my purpose is to get somebody to the toilet quickly. My purpose is not to therefore otherwise neglect. We have had discussions, and certainly there, I can imagine a scenario where there would be systemic understaffing or a problem like that. where this is why it's important to us that the facility and operator language be a part of this bill and not simply the private personal caregiver. Right. That if it is, if something is not in fact the result of the caregiver's intent, but is a larger pattern of whoever owns a business, or I don't even know if it's a facility or an operator, knowingly permitting conditions to exist that don't allow the workers to do their best work to provide the care that's needed to the vulnerable adults, then that is something that may very well fall under this statute if you had the evidence for it.
Members, I just want to run up the first yellow flag. We've got till 2:30, and it is my intention to move forward on this. So I just given a little bit of a warning. Senator Youngbar, you had a question of some witnesses.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and it is kind of interesting because I'm kind of getting mixed messages on language. I heard Mr. Freeman, I thought, say that we didn't want to define things, and I thought I just heard we, you know, maybe want to put more language in to define things. So I'm a little mixed on that, but, you know, I'm thinking, Senator Limmer, when you came up and talked about Minnesota, you know, being behind on this, and many times I'd come before judiciary with other language and bills myself where we were extremely behind, and especially on penalties, and you always ran up the red flag on increasing penalties on things. So it's kind of interesting to see you be the first guy here, and I was thinking to myself, you know, being that runner and bicyclist, that if somebody kills me when I'm out running, it's a misdemeanor. So it's a very interesting thing. But I'm really trying to get to what Senator Latz and Senator Goodwin kind of said, and I think we do need more definition with this. I think we need to talk about the facilities. I think we need to figure out who is knowingly or intentionally causing these conditions. And it's not coming to me, but I thought there was something within this section of statute that went to court recently where there was an issue over the language and the lack of definition in the language. I don't know, maybe Senator Latz would remember something like that. But that's what I'm trying to get to is I don't think we're ready for this, and I want Senator Limmer to tell me if are we going to work on that. And Mr. Freeman, why wouldn't we want to? And I have an amendment that I think gets to some of that. I don't think, given the time, we should bring it out. But I don't want this to move to the Senate floor without addressing all these issues. And I think in language that everybody understands, not just attorneys, because this is a big deal. We want to make sure this kind of penalty is in place. We want to make sure everybody understands where it's applicable, where it's not, so we don't have this fear, because we don't think everybody else across the state of Minnesota is as, so we say, ethical, not even ethical, I don't know what term to use, but
diligent,
there we go, as Senator Goodwin said, diligent in the minutiae. People have heavy caseloads. We need to be diligent in the minutiae if this would move forward with this kind of language, and I don't think this is good enough. I think we need to define a lot of other things that haven't been defined, and I want Senator Limmer at least and hopefully Mr. Freeman to tell me that we will work on.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, there seems to be a lot in your question or your statement, Senator Jungbauer. First, if I can point you to the packet that's before you, there's a fiscal note in your packet, and if you had an opportunity to look at it in 13, if this did become law, this impacts the budget in the first year by $10,000. That's in when it comes to correction costs, that is the proverbial spit in the ocean. And yet at the same time, I think you can only imagine what type of sense of security some families might have if we had such a law on the books, that they would know that there's at least people watching and there will be an opportunity for our society to respond when their loved ones are now the vulnerable victim of someone for some twisted reason intentionally neglects their loved one. This bill, I believe, is needed in the state of Minnesota. We made mention of the five states There's only 5 states out of 50 that have not addressed this issue, and Minnesota is one of them. I find it hard to believe that those of us who have a great amount of pride in Minnesota of having a wide range of care for our most needy people would ignore the concept of having some type of response that prosecutors could have, another tool in the toolbox for the most egregious crime against vulnerable adults. This type of exercise is always one where we debate how far should we go, how do we define, how do we not define, do we define by act, do we define by intent, and throughout all of criminal law, we have examples of exactly that. In both instances, sometimes both instances. So this is a proposal that's before us now. I'm trying to give the most tools to the prosecutors so that the signal goes out that we in Minnesota are not going to tolerate this type of behavior. And as far as the comments about worrying about the reputation of a corporation that would perhaps allow this, or if a reputation was involved, well, if they have staff that's intentionally neglecting their wards, their charges, there should be a reputation that is established if there is wrongdoing, if there's a prosecution, and if that prosecution ends in a conviction. I believe that there should be a reputation established for companies that or individuals that have neglected a vulnerable adult. I wish Senator Freeman would have had the photographs of the settings that he had discovered. And I think they were in Hennepin County, weren't they? Or were they elsewhere?
They were elsewhere, but they're real life cases.
If you've ever seen the movie Hoarders, but imagine instead of stacks of material or magazines and boxes all over a room, it's covered with human and animal waste and food scraps that have been there for perhaps months, years, and bed linen that had never been changed for months, maybe years. And somehow that got missed, and we have someone who claims they're an expert, a professional that we rely on, that we trust to take care of those individuals, and they're neglecting a vulnerable adult like that. I can't imagine that any of us would not want to respond.
Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Limmer, first off, I didn't say some of those things you were addressing to, and I have no problem with the penalties. I don't think anybody in this room has a problem with the penalties. It is addressing those penalties and without going back to define other issues. I think we're very clear about that. I'm all in favor. I've been in favor of increasing penalties on numerous things that have died an egregious death in this Judiciary Committee. I think we are sadly in a society where egregious things do happen. And we can all pick out those kind of examples. It's not every day that those happen, thank goodness. We can all pick out those great examples that make everybody sit back in shock and awe. But we want to make sure on the other end of the spectrum that with people with heavy caseloads, we're not charging individuals or facilities. And if somebody does, if it's a facility that does have people doing wrong things, they should have a bad reputation. I've not even addressed those kind of things. But I don't think you do one end of the law without simultaneously making sure you're defining the other end of it. So that was my point.
Second yellow flag, Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, I feel like we're running out of time in the middle of the discussion. And I'm getting the sense that there are some questions left on this committee and some possible solutions to some of these questions that we just haven't had an opportunity to explore. As I said in my earlier comment, I think we all would be surprised if there are those who oppose making felony penalties under the appropriate circumstances for the egregious cases. But I, too, have some concerns about the way this is written. I had a bill on introductions today. which addressed these in a somewhat different manner, and I have an A2 amendment prepared to that effect. I'm not going to offer it right now because of time, but I'm concerned because we're talking about intentional neglect in a sense that it's like an affirmative act, like somehow the conduct itself is more egregious. And as I asked Ms. Swayze to specify some of that more egregious conduct, it was helpful to hear some of that. But the statute itself defines neglect as the failure to provide. Simply the failure to provide the necessary food, clothing, shelter, health care, or supervision. So making that choice to help one patient instead of two others might be a perfectly reasonable choice, but it would still be an intentional choice, a failure to provide supervision to the other two patients. Technically, it violates the statute. And while I have confidence in Mr. Freeman's discretion, anyone who's been involved in the system knows there are cases of overcharging that occur, or other prosecutors that don't seem to exercise the same level of discretion. And in the case of institutions, if they get charged with A and they end up pleading to a less serious offense, B or C, they're still hung up with the Medicare restrictions because it arose out of an initial kind of a charge, and they could still get banned from Medicare reimbursement, even if ultimately the conviction did not reflect the initial charge. So I guess I'm going to ask for some guidance from the chair here, because, I mean, the amendment that I do have prepared, the A4 amendment, would go to some of the questions, points that Ms. Swayze made. Failing to administer medications or call 911 would be a gross deviation from the standard of care. Allowing someone to languish in bad conditions for an extended length of time would be another way to kind of define the conduct, to kind of get at the level of intent or neglect that I'm more comfortable calling felony, not merely defining it as the harm that resulted. And so I'm inclined to do one of two things, either offer the A4 amendment right now, which would accomplish that purpose, or I think would get in some of that direction. Number two, make a motion to lay this matter on the table, because I really think there are serious questions here that we need to address. And that actually might be the better way if we could do it that way, for two reasons. One is we'd have an opportunity to come back and sort some of this out. Number two, this committee has a history of trying to get the legislation right before it leaves this room. And especially because it sounds like this bill, when it leaves this room, will go straight to the floor. I don't think we want to have these kind of discussions on the floor of the Senate. It's going to get awfully messy. And I'd rather do our work here rather than rely on anyone else to do the work for us. And that has been the history of this committee. And third, because I understand there is to be a summit of the parties that are interested next week, February 9th, I think it's already scheduled. Representative Gottwalt, who's carrying the other body's legislation, has already scheduled that to fit people's ability to attend. At which some of these issues could be addressed, and we might be able to come back at another committee and have a bill that has achieved some consensus, has addressed some of these concerns, and then when the bill leaves this committee, it will be a bill that we can truly say has the broad consensus of the parties that are interested in it and the members of this committee, and will make much smoother sailing through the rest of the process in this body and in the other body.
Senator Latz, I know at least one of the testifiers, I think Senator Mr. Goodnow, had talked about working on the bill, you know, after it leaves here and before it goes to the floor. Do you have any interest in exploring that and participating in that discussion with the various interested parties?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I am. But I think if it's just me, it abdicates this committee's responsibility to review the results of that process and either tweak it some more if we think it's appropriate here, or at least give it the full Judiciary Committee's and Public Safety Committee's imprimatur before it goes to the floor. This committee will be making a recommendation to the full Senate. I think we ought to be fully informed about what the bill looks like before it gets to the Senate floor. So I think at this time I'm going to make a motion to lay the matter on the table.
Is Motion has been made to lay the matter on the table. I don't think that is debatable, but I am not certain, to be quite candid. I am told it is not a debatable motion. All those in favor of laying this bill on the table signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
No. I'm going to call for division. I'm not sure. All those in favor of laying this matter on the table, please raise your hands. Seven. Those opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you, committee.
I believe that concludes the work of the committee today, and we stand in adjournment.